Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's going on, man?
Hello. How are you, Andrew?
I'm doing all right. You?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
Good.
Thursday, weekend's in sight.
I'm an uncle again.
It's unbelievable. Congratulations.
Thanks very
much.
But
not only uncle.
I'm the godfather now.
This is like your dream.
It is. It absolutely is.
Now, like, we're just going to be kind of, like, resigned to many Marlon Brando impressions, and, like, you're really going to play the role. I know you.
You come to me.
There we go.
You come to me looking for a favor. You ask me to do a murder. You never take my hand in friendship.
Forever.
Yeah, this is, like, eventually you'll just morph into him. You'll just start, like...
eating too much.
Yeah, putting, like, gauze in your cheeks to try to, like, simulate... Yeah, I know how you operate.
Gently tapping you on the cheek of your face to show affection. Yeah, all those things.
Oh, what a show we have coming up for you. Of course, we're going to take a look back at the Champions League, and we'll look ahead to a pretty big weekend slate of matches. Obviously, it's decision day in MLS. It's also El Clasico coming up in Spain. And a very big one in the Premier League with Tottenham and Manchester City. And, of course, Borussia Dortmund with their big win yesterday against Atletico Madrid, and Christian Pulisic returning to action. Stefan Butzko, who's been on the program before, he'll join us to talk about that game. I just found out he has ties to Philadelphia, too.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
But we're going to be talking about the yellow wall as opposed to Fly Eagle.
Yeah, I know. I saw Christian Pulisic commented on how incredible the crowd was for them yesterday, and that helped to carry them through. So I guess you really – look, there is a reason that teams perform better at home than on the road. And, like, I think sometimes the fans downplay what their actual importance is in a game. But I really – I actually do think in soccer it can help really carry a team when the fans are truly behind them. And that is oftentimes the case there.
I would say there's a few venues in the Premier League who claim to have these amazing atmospheres could well take a look at the Westfalenstadion and maybe rethink that, because it's trite, but they're the 12th man.
Yep. Let's see. I guess we'll go through this chronologically. We're not going to go through every single game. So if we don't get to your team, I apologize in advance.
But that's what the mailbag is for. Mail, send a question in or a comment and we'll deal with it there.
Maybe. I mean, look, there's some teams that I don't know how much we're going to talk about. This is just the reality.
What if we have 10,000 listeners that are from Young Boys Bern? You're not going to talk about Young Boys Bern?
If they give us that... Well, you know what? I take that all back, because by popular demand, we instituted the wheel of crap teams, so...
Maybe we should have a Champions League version.
But can you be a crap team and be in the Champions League?
You can be Spurs. Zing. Oh, it's going to be feisty.
I can't believe you just said that.
I didn't mean that.
Let's start with Tuesday. We'll start with Manchester United and Juventus. 1-0.
Speaking of the wheel.
1-0. It goes to Juve. Stop us when you've heard this before. It was a lifeless performance from Jose Mourinho's team.
It was stupefying. And the narrative that has emerged afterwards from journalists, commentators, Bleacher Report studio guests, and Mourinho himself, and he's going to want to push it, is that this was like some kind of barnstorming second half where United pushed and pushed and they just couldn't unlock that brilliant Juventus side. But that's utter tripe. I mean, apart from Paul Pogba's shot off the post that hit Wojciech Szczesny in the back of the head and really could have gone in, did they really carve Juventus open? Did they really trouble them?
No.
No. But that's the narrative that Mourinho's spinning.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know. I kind of thought his narrative was more along the lines of that Juve are just really good.
No. What he said to BT was that, you want to talk about the attacks, but let me talk about something else, which was the defending. And...
Well, is that what we have for Mourinho?
I think that's...
Well, he talked about Manchester United's performance. Should we listen to this?
Okay, well, listen. Unless you have something different.
I don't know.
How dare you contradict me?
This is what you sent me.
All right, play it then.
Jose, we knew Juventus had quality, but what did you make of the performance tonight?
Our performance? The possible performance. And when I say the possible, I say that in the other side was huge quality. And sometimes people, when we speak about quality, sometimes people look for Cristiano, Dybala, Pjanic, but in a top team, you have to look to Chiellini, to Bonucci, and I think Juventus is this kind of team that when they are in front, it's very, very difficult to concede a goal.
Yeah, he's saying what I just said, that they're really good.
But that's spin, Andrew. That is absolute spin. Has Bonucci or Chiellini had an easier night? They had a harder night against Genoa at the weekend. This is just bollocks. It's nonsense.
It's also not
it's
only...
It's spin. By not talking up... By talking up Chiellini and by talking up... Bonucci, what you're saying basically is that, oh, we had them on the rack, but we just couldn't get through. Nonsense. You never troubled them.
I actually read into it even deeper than that.
Okay.
The two players that he pointed out, JJ, what positions do they play?
Center backs.
Mm-hmm. He's been obsessed with this position because he feels that he was not properly funded in that way, and he is trying to reinforce to the board, Ronaldo... Pjanic, that's all fine and
get
good.
Get me some 30-somethings.
But you can't win without players at that position. Chiellini's and Bonucci's. Now, look, there's obviously some truth to it. The reason, we've said this 1,000 times, the reason that our sympathy falls a little bit short is because Mourinho also handpicked the guys who are currently playing in those positions. Not all of them, but a lot,
Smalling. He didn't pick Smalling.
No, not
but
Smalling.
Lindelof and Bailly.
Right. So that's where the sympathy falls a little bit short. But it is, to me, it is not a coincidence that Mourinho singled out those two guys.
Remember Tony O'Donoghue, who was destroyed by Martin O'Neill, the Irish reporter?
Yeah.
So last night he spoke to Mourinho. Do you know what he said? No, he was throwing softball questions to Mourinho because I guess Irish journalists don't get much time with him and they're afraid to annoy him. He was right on the money with you. He said... He spoke about Bonucci, Chiellini, and Antonio O'Donoghue goes, wouldn't you love to have them? Yes, I would. Oh, yeah. You're so right. But it just goes to show, he wants winners, he wants guys in their between 28 and 35, and it's a short win mentality, and he's just...
I don't have a ton more to say about this
game. There isn't, because two shots on target in 90 minutes, 6 in total.
The only other question that I have about United, and this could wind up becoming a podcast unto itself.
Yeah.
But you see their league form. You see that the Champions League is not going the way necessarily that they would hope that it would have gone. And you hear Mourinho's rhetoric, and you just can't help but start to wonder, is it that they're in poor form, or is it that they're actually... just maybe not that good?
I think it might be a bit of both. If you look at where, Lindelof, Shaw, and Young. Look at their back four just for one second. Not to harp on Mourinho, but Luke Shaw has been given an extended contract, but he has hardly established himself as a mainstay in the United team apart from this season and bits of last season. And when I say about established, I mean he's constantly under the microscope from the manager. And indeed, the manager bring the ire of the fans on him. He's had a tough time. Is he top quality? I don't know. Ashley Young's a converted fullback, and Lindelof just hasn't settled at United. Matic was poisoned the other night, Andrew. He couldn't get anything going. Rashford, to me, has played out of position wide on the right. It doesn't work. Mata is getting into the extended years of his career. Anthony Martial, I think, is an excellent footballer, underused. And Lukaku is isolated. And not only is he isolated, he's out of form. Put it all together.
Yeah. I just wonder, when I look at them, it's Manchester United, but who are the players on that club that are locked down first 11 on the other really good clubs in England?
That's a great question. I mean,
I would say
Matic
Pogba
doesn't get into Chelsea right now. With the way the Chelsea midfield is right now, Pogba doesn't get into it because he doesn't move the ball like Jorginho does. So, and he also doesn't... that's another thing as well. Pogba, I can't watch Pogba toil for United anymore. It doesn't... I know there's loads of guys with the stats who'll give you his progressive passes, the runs he makes, etc. And that's fine. But the other night, he wasn't doing anything. If anything, he was delaying the movement of the ball. And also, a couple of times, to his credit and in fairness to him, Pogba was on the ball, Andrew, and he'd look up the field and there was no movement. Mm-hmm. Partly because Lukaku was isolated, partly because Rashford is not a wide player, even in a three. It's just it's a mess. I don't believe there's a plan. I could tell you there's a plan to the way Juventus went, the way they pinged the ball around in that first half in particular. You could see there was in training, patterns of play being done and a way and a style and a defined role for each player, and there isn't at United.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that way right now. Let's see, we move on. Another game on Tuesday that stood out a little bit. Real Madrid surviving Victoria Pilsen 2-1.
Surviving is the word.
Yeah, it was not a convincing performance in a time when Julen Lopetegui desperately needs one. He didn't look thrilled really at any point during the match, didn't really celebrate when they scored their goals.
The fans weren't exactly... they weren't effusive in their praise of the team either. There was a lot of whistles at full time, half time, but they won, which is just like crucial for just extending his life at the club a little bit longer. But Pilsen should have had two goals themselves.
Yeah, and it does feel like there's just kind of this air. I guess it makes sense to talk about Real Madrid after we talk about Manchester United, because in both places it feels like just this, you know, air of inevitability.
It's like you're waiting for it to happen. You're waiting for the piano to fall from the sky, but you know it's coming. And I wonder, Andrew, if they get... say they get... say it's a 2-0 defeat, which is probably, without Messi, within the realm of possibility, or say Suarez goes off...
this weekend you're talking
about. Yeah, in the Clásico. I think that's it for him. It's got to be.
I know, which is unfortunate. That game is coming along at the absolute worst time.
Oh, my God.
When you, aside from the fact that Leo Messi just broke his arm, it's just so... like, it's in Barcelona. It's coming off a midweek Champions League match. Like, it just... I don't know. It just feels like this is a time when he needs, like, a few lower table teams to kind of rebuild some goodwill.
You say that, but if I told you they're playing Huesca at the weekend, would you be confident they beat them? You wouldn't.
More than if it was at Barcelona, and the result he needs is the same.
Look at the results he's been getting, though. Leganés, teams like that. It's.
I mean, maybe a draw. I guess as long as Real Madrid look good, a draw would be enough.
A 1-1 draw would be... he'd take it right now.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm guessing that he would. Boy, it's amazing. Like, I was thinking about him, Lopetegui, the other day, and just like, life is weird the way things happen. Like, you know, he's Spain's manager. You know, like, he's heading into a World Cup and he's managing a national team that has a chance to maybe go on and win the thing. And then he gets contacted by Real Madrid, and now he's kind of between two minds, and this leaks out, and now he's fired by Spain on the eve of a World Cup, but he's got Real Madrid's job. But now here we are, like, 2 months into a season, and he's probably losing the Real Madrid job. Like, this guy's life has reached a peak and now potentially a valley within the span of 2 months. It's like when Big Sam got the England job. It's just incredible
everything
how quickly stuff changes.
Everything he had ever wanted. And it's like, he's had the two top jobs in football. Okay, you argue with me, United job, Liverpool, whatever. Uh-huh. I'm saying that Real Madrid and Spain are the two top jobs in football. And he could potentially have lost them before Thanksgiving.
Wow. It's all fleeting. Everyone
It'll
out there.
Be lonely
everyone out
Christmas.
There, take a hold of what you love dearly and just keep tight grab on it.
Realize whatever you're doing, it's all transient. And if it's football management, it's even more so.
It's really transient. We move from Tuesday to Wednesday, and we start with Tottenham.
Oh, I couldn't do it to you this week. I had so many songs lined up to do like a sad montage. Yeah. It's pointless.
Yeah, their European nightmare continued yesterday.
And I feel bad.
And it took multiple forms. Obviously, in the end, it took the form of a draw in a match that they needed to win. But it also took the form of a, I don't know, people who are anti-Spurs can fight me on it, but I will take to the death with me that that goal should have been allowed.
Sure.
I just don't understand.
Sure.
I don't get it.
You can spin it any way you want. Kane is not let's get it out of the way. Kane is not interfering in the play, and there's no reason for the linesman to raise his flag. The only thing I can say is that his perception, like, we have the stand angle, so we can see above. His perception was that maybe Kane was closer to the play, but he's not. And
but like, there's an extra ref in the Champions League for issues like this.
Yeah, I don't know what his function is.
Serious? Can we? I didn't want to take this down a VAR road, but like, you see things like this happen, and how can you not? Like, how can you just sit here and say like, no, it's not necessary?
But even more,
it's so necessary.
But even more than that, you're talking about like just moments of calamity and misfortune. Okay, so the referee getting that wrong. Spurs can do nothing about that.
Yeah.
Alderweireld's mistake on the first goal. When Spurs look in control, they're possessing the ball. It's a basic ball back to him. It's one he deals with 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And he just missteps. And then, to compound it further, I would much prefer, if I'm in that position, that Chucky Lozano runs straight in and scores. What makes it worse is that Alderweireld did so well to track back and get a brilliant block to whip it up, and where, and Lloris has just taken two steps, and it's not his fault either, and it loops into the net.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you're right. Alderweireld got back, he recovered, and he made what in any other circumstance would have been a tremendous defensive play, and we would be talking about that today. Like, well, at least he recovered. That's a great job by
anything,
an elite defender.
It helped it go into the net.
They can't just lose normally,
they? I was thinking about you described this as a nightmare. We were texting yesterday during it, and I was shouting for Spurs because I felt there was a layer of injustice, and I you know, I don't want to see you sad. But it was interesting at the end, and I was like, will I text this to Andrew at full time? That game is a nightmare for you in the sporting sense. All it needed to become a full nightmare for you was for a massive Florida Gator to wander onto the field and eat Christian Eriksen. Well, that's your biggest nightmare.
Well, yeah, I have literal nightmares
you
about
have
alligators.
Recurring nightmares about gators.
Right.
That's all it would have taken, though.
So what were you going to text me?
I was going to say, oh, all we need is a big alligator now.
It would have been a true full-on nightmare. The one thing that I wanted to spell about this, because, look, in my mind, they're out. I know that it's still mathematical that they find a way through. They probably have to win out, which includes winning in Barcelona, which is going to be incredibly difficult. But it could happen. But to me, like, that was it. They needed to take 6 points from PSV, and they haven't done that. But one thing that I started to hear a little bit is this idea of Pochettino. Like, it's going to be another early crash out in the Champions League. You know, he hasn't won a trophy yet. What exactly, when is he on a hot seat? Never. He's not on a hot seat ever for what he has done at this club, for the way he has built this club to be in a position where we could look at a 2-2 draw in PSV or a late loss against Inter Milan, or going back to last year, a late collapse against Juve. All of these in elite European competition, he has gotten them to the point where that can be viewed as a disappointment. Okay, that was like never even on the radar for this club. So, I mean, for the people out there who are saying that, by the way, like, they've got more points than they've ever had at this stage in the Premier League, and they've done it while in the beginning of the season Harry Kane was in poor form, and for almost the entirety of the season, Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen have been hurt.
Right.
Eriksen only just coming back, Alli still injured.
And
I mean, come on, like, what? Now Jan Vertonghen's out till December. So, like, anybody who that's even, like, a kernel of a thought in their head, get it out. It's ridiculous. Yeah, he makes mistakes every once in a while. He's a human being. Every manager that we come across in any league in the world makes mistakes. But for what he's done for this club, I just, like, that thought to me is insanity.
Let me tell you, the real worry for me is, how wonderful was Eriksen coming back in after being out for a month? He was magnificent yesterday. And I think he's the one player Spurs cannot function without. He's irreplaceable to them. And he is the one that might get antsy, might look at his age, might look at his career and think, I need to get a trophy. I wouldn't be worrying about Poch. I'd be worrying about Eriksen. But that is a conversation.
But my belief in Poch is that, like, you're right, Eriksen, I don't want to say that these guys on Tottenham don't matter, that they'll just find a new Eriksen. That's naive, and that's just not true.
Yeah.
But I believe that their success begins with Poch. It doesn't necessarily begin with the players.
Okay.
But at any rate, that is what it is. The other match from that group, it was a Messi-less Barcelona beating Inter to now take control of the group.
Yeah. So I watched this. It was the game on TNT. So I decided, let's make life easy for myself. And rather than go in the endless search to try and find out where the other game is, it was boring. It wasn't great because Inter tried to contain. And even without Messi, Barcelona they're just wonderful at times. And Suarez's goal pass to Rafinha was the moment of the game for me. It was just such a beautiful ball. And I was just a bit disappointed in Inter, actually. I thought, people are trying to find out over the opening months about who they are. They are a mystery. Like, they're riding fairly high in Serie A, but, like, they didn't start the season great. They had a couple of reverses. And I saw them against Spurs, and not to open old wounds. But they were, I thought Spurs were a better team than them. And I'm just trying to discover what Inter are, but I didn't see it yesterday. And I guess caution in the new camp is to be expected. But I thought I'd see a little bit more from them. But Barcelona, yes. It looks as if I don't know. It's going to take some turnaround now for Spurs to get back into that group.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think Barcelona are kind of now planting their flag in this competition as the team to beat. That's sort of where I'm at now. We're halfway through the group stage. I feel like you can start looking at things like that. And, you know, it was a difficult group. They've gone through the first three games unscathed, even without Messi, against arguably the second best team in that group. So that's kind of where I'm at with them. PSG eking out a 2-2 draw with Napoli thanks to a 93rd-minute equalizer from Angel Di Maria. So, you know, PSG celebrating at the end to get the draw, but I don't know. This has not been a tournament to celebrate overall for them so far.
No, and I think what we've seen already has happened again. They've met a good team. And I'm loath to disparage a league that I don't watch enough to have wildly, you know, critical views of. But, you know, they seem to be ticking away fine in Ligue 1. It's clearly not the highest standard. And when they come up against robust opposition like Liverpool and Napoli, they struggle. And I think Napoli, and Carlo Ancelotti is going to be very upset that they didn't take all 3 points from that game. It's the same thing again. It's a front three that, as talented as they are, don't always link that well together because there seems to be almost competition for space and competition for strikes on goal. We saw at one point where Cavani kicked Neymar as they both collided for a cutback. It was an interesting little vignette from the game. It wasn't the only time they got in each other's way either. They got in each other's way. It was Neymar and Cavani then, I think, was it Mbappe on another chance. So, look, Napoli are what we thought they are. They are a roster of extremely talented individuals, including Angel Di Maria, whose goal was just beautiful to equalise it. And Tuchel is still struggling to put a framework on this. And I think as long as you have Neymar in the team, you're not going to be able to. It's all got to come through him.
Yeah, it's just interesting. You mentioned the Ligue 1 thing, and like, you know, they've played 10 games. They've won 10 games. They're averaging almost 4 goals per game,
which is just destroying the opposition, really.
Has that league, the way we talk about it, it's like if you took Real Madrid and dropped them in MLS. Like, I feel like that's how we talk about PSG in Ligue 1. Has it always been that way, but there wasn't a team like PSG, so we didn't quite notice that? Like, Lyon, Marseille, like, there have been clubs in that league that we did view in Monaco.
Yeah, but the money has changed everything. Just like Manchester City, Andrew, the Middle East ownership has tilted things completely. Now, yeah, there is no, since 2012, since they bought the club, there is no competition. They've eviscerated it. It is a money issue. France does not have the robust club game that could withstand it. It doesn't have, like, for years, Lyon, when they had coming through with Ben Arfa and Benzema.
Oh, Michael Essien before he went to Chelsea.
But even notice, they didn't have the financials to hold on to those players. Like, every year, the amazing thing about Lyon was, hey, Lyon earned the Champions League quarterfinals again. How were they managing? Because they sold X or Y in the summer.
Right.
So that just goes to show you the financials weren't there amongst those other teams. Marseille have been bought, as we know, by the owner of the Dodgers, and they're trying to kind of reinvigorate themselves, but they're not there yet. The money has skewed things in France hugely.
Through three games of the Champions League, PSG right now are third, as Liverpool sit top of the group with the two wins and a draw, and then Napoli behind them.
And Napoli, for me, right now, just on Champions League play, I'm not talking about generally, are the best team in that group. Again, Insigne, I heard a rumour over the international break that Liverpool were interested in him. Go get him. He's just wonderful. Fantastic player. And Mertens, again, they play with a real plan and a real purpose. I really like them.
Yeah, it felt a little bit unfortunate in some ways that they didn't go on and actually win that game, because it did feel like they were deserving of it. With PSG, though, it's, like I said, we're halfway through the group stage and they right now are in third. It will be truly fascinating to see what happens if they don't make it out of their group. I know it's not the easiest group in the world. You know, you look at it in a vacuum and say, okay, well, Liverpool are really good. Napoli are really good. It's not crazy to not advance from that group. But like you always say on this podcast, for PSG, it's all about this tournament. They view that they should be beating anybody that they play with the money they've invested. So if they can't even get out of their group, I don't know where they go from here. Do they just, like, tear it all down, sell Neymar, you know, sell Mbappe? I really don't know.
They won't do that. they'll try not to. There's too much invested in that.
So you keep buying on top of this?
I think that's the only way they'll operate. They'll try and work their way around financial fair play, which seems to be fairly easy to get past. Almost like Atletico's defense last night. You see what I did there?
Oh, that was a professional transition to Borussia Dortmund dismantling Atletico Madrid. 4-0, a result that you just...
Doesn't happen to Simeone's Atleti.
Yeah. It does not, like a team known for their defending, and this is not to downplay Borussia Dortmund in any way, shape, or form. They're having a great season in the league. They've been great in the Champions League. They're really good. We both think highly of them, but it's not about that. No one does this to Atletico Madrid.
No, and there was one goal in particular. I think it was Sancho's goal. I mean, the defending in the lead up to it was schoolyard stuff. Simeone has always struck me like as a mafia-style figure, okay. And you could almost call him the Don of defence. And to see his team taken to the woodshop like that, it reminded me of the scene from Godfather where Sonny escapes the compound. He doesn't escape it, he leaves the compound, and Barzagli's men get him and kill him.
At the toll booth.
At the toll booth,
on
right.
The causeway, yeah.
Yeah, and I just imagine Simeone cradling Antoine Griezmann after the game and saying this.
Look how they
massacred
my boy.
You're just so deeply entrenched into this Godfather metaphor for you that you, like, this is it now. This is just all things.
No, Simeone was there. Look how they massacred my boy.
Well, they sure did. Let's talk more about that now with a guy who we've had on this show before. We always love speaking to Stefan Butzko, who covers Borussia Dortmund for ESPN FC, back on the program with us now. Stefan, what's up, man?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we were just so, I guess, caught off guard by that game yesterday. Not necessarily because we don't think highly of Borussia Dortmund. We certainly do. It's just that we don't see that happen to Atletico Madrid very often. So I guess my first question to you would be kind of more of a broad one. You know, Dortmund, they're top of the league in Germany. Like we just said, they've come off this win that was maybe the most impressive of the Champions League for any club so far. It just seems to be such a far cry from where they were roughly this time a year ago. I mean, what has changed with this club that has kind of propelled them to where they are now?
How much time do you have? Just asking before I go into too much detail. So basically, this time last year, they could not beat Apoel Nicosia at home in the Champions League and were truly embarrassed. So what has changed? They brought in a lot of new players like Axel Witsel, who played really well in defensive midfield, Thomas Delaney, and just got rid of some deadwood, let's say, like Aubameyang, Socrates, and so on and so forth. Not that these are bad players, but simply because they were, I guess in America, you would describe it as locker room cancer at some point. And right now you have a new coach who is actually doing really well. Lucien Favre has implemented tactics that work, which wasn't the case with Peter Bosch and Peter Stöger last season. So that's, I guess, the first thing. Also, youth players like Christian Pulisic have made the next step. Jadon Sancho is stepping up, and also Jakob Brun Larsen, who nobody had on their radar at the start of the season, are performing now on Champions League level and doing very well, that is. And the same can be said about the centre-back position with Ben Axel Zagadou and Diallo, who played really well last night. So that's just a completely different and refurbished Borussia Dortmund team. They said they needed to make a lot of changes, and they did. They wanted to rekindle a new spirit in that side. And this is basically what's happening. The Dortmund now are a very robust side that, have this never say die mentality, which was certainly lacking, and have the coach to give it all a tactical corset, let's say, to put it all into action.
Stefan, you mentioned Christian Pulisic there, and that's going to be of particular interest to our listeners. If you were to summarize how he's taken the next step, like what do you mean? Like, what is he doing now in this early part of the new season that maybe you didn't see him do last season?
Well, it's mostly for him about consistency, right? He's still struggling a little bit with it because even this season, I would say that he finds it very tough to string two good half times together. But that being said, under Lucien Favre, he has now become an automatic starter. He is the first name, well, not the first name on the team sheet, but as soon as he's fit and fresh, he's always in there. And that is new opposed to last season, where he, of course, was the player with the third most minutes, but that was more down to others being injured. This time it's really when Pulisic is fit and healthy, then he is starting, and that's a big difference. And of course, he has matured, as any player would, and he is utilizing that because I think he's picking his battles a little bit better. He's become a little bit more well-rounded, let's say, also defensively, because that's something that was lacking before. And especially last night, he showed that he can track back now with impetus. And that is, I guess, for every Christian Pulisic fan out there, and I know there are lots, it's very good news to hear.
Yeah, because this is an American-based podcast, we're just so hypersensitive about him. Like, we need to know that he's being taken care of. We need to know that he's being liked. JJ and I basically act like his mother and father here abroad, and we're worried about him, and we just want to make sure that everything's okay with him.
Yes.
Is he loved there?
Yes, he's loved and cherished. And
yeah, and can,
don't worry.
Stefan, can you make sure that whatever girls he's hanging around with, that they're the right type, okay?
Yeah, please give me a little bit more detail on what the right type is.
Just make sure that they're, you know, that they won't keep him out late at night. That's all I'm saying. It's very important for the future of U.S. soccer.
Right.
All right. If you make that request, I might want to return that because my wife has raised a couple of questions about Joel Embiid's girlfriend, and we are both from Philly. So please make sure that Embiid and Ben Simmons also are hanging with the right,
quote unquote, the right type.
I know. Wasn't Ben Simmons with like Kendall Jenner over the summer?
No. Okay. Well, let's make sure that that doesn't happen to Pulisic. Okay.
Yeah. Back to Dortmund for a second, Stefan. I'm curious. Yeah, just like listening to analysis following the match yesterday and hearing other podcasts talking about that match, all of a sudden it's like snowballing very quickly with what they're doing in the league combined with that game. Now you're starting to hear people say maybe they could be this season's Liverpool and go on this deep run through the tournament. Is there an obvious shortcoming with them that you look at and say, no, that thing, that will prevent them from doing something like that?
No, right now, actually, there isn't, because they have built this team on defensive solidity and not the other way around, as they've done so many times before. And that is really what you need in the Champions League. They look very mature, even though they have a lot of young players. And the upside is for Dortmund, Paco Alcácer, their main striker, obviously, didn't play last night. They still managed to put 4 goals past Atletico. And they, so I have read and been told by Axel Witsel himself last night, haven't conceded so many goals or win by that of a margin since 2009, so in almost a decade. So it was quite the historic result. So Dortmund will only get better. If it will be enough to reach a Champions League final or to even win it, that's really tough to say, because a lot of teams, when we look at the Barcelona's, Bayern Munich's, Real Madrid's, and all the big sides, they usually tend to improve when it comes to April, May, or whatever. So, yeah, it's still very early in the season. Dortmund will certainly improve, and I think they have a good shot of maybe reaching the semifinals, but I wouldn't like go as far as saying, yeah, they can win the Champions League. It's certainly not impossible, but, you know, hold your horses for now just a little bit.
Stefan, what type of person, what type of manager is Lucien Favre? Because I think we got a good view of who Klopp is. I don't think we had long enough to really understand who Peter Bosz was, but we knew who Thomas Tuchel is. What kind of manager, if you were to characterize Lucien Favre, what is he?
Well, the first word as a journalist working with him together is awkward, because he is Swiss, but of French descent, so to speak, and he does not really like to communicate a lot. He is very coy on answers, doesn't like to give away anything. So getting to know Lucien Favre is really, really tough. That being said, from what you hear from the players and the staff around Dortmund, you hear the highest praise that he's an absolute stickler. You always hear the details that he really wants his players to take care about, whether to block a shot with your left foot or your right foot. Also, managing it well with a big squad. Dortmund have 29 players to just create a team spirit and make everyone feel important. And I think, you know, as much of a tactical brain you can be as a coach, it's really important that you handle the dressing room well. I don't want to say any names, Mourinho, but you know, it's very important. So for now, he's leaving a very good impression. But that being said, Favre also has the tendency of crashing and burning after a season or two. So for now, it's positive, but you never know how it will develop.
Stefan, last one from me, and it's taking a look more at the league rather than the Champions League. You know, we have a lot of Dortmund followers here simply because of Christian Pulisic, and also a lot of Bayern Munich followers simply because they're Bayern Munich. It's only 8 games in, so it still feels like we're relatively early in the season, but it is kind of getting late early. You look at the table, Bayern sit fourth. Dortmund have now separated themselves at least a little bit with a 4-point cushion. Is there, like, we're so not used to there being a title race, really, over the last few seasons in the Bundesliga. When you look at Bayern, when you look at Dortmund, do you feel like this is a season where that could truly change? Or do you think things will normalize and Bayern will find their spot at the top as we've grown used to the last several years?
Well, last season it was certainly that case. You know, sometimes I walk around the city or Germany in general and I look at 10-year-old kids and I know they've witnessed nothing else than Bayern Munich winning the title in Germany, since they basically have a conscience. Or so that's problematic, and I think this is going to change in some way or form this season because the Bundesliga have a title race. I don't know if you took the time to discuss the epic Bayern press conference from last Friday on this show, but you know, Bayern basically shown themselves to be really rattled. They actually had a press conference scheduled just to hit out on the media and on the, let's say, critical reporting toward their players, and they didn't really take it well. So, you know, obviously there was a bit of hypocrisy coming out of the Bayern camp because while they demanded respect for their players, they absolutely slated Juan Bernat, who's now playing at PSG. And calling, basically saying that he played crap and cost them the Champions League nearly, and stuff like that. So that being said, the overlying question, of course, is what exactly was the intention of such a press conference, and do they want to mitigate further problematic stints? And Bayern right now, they look rusty, especially after the World Cup. Players like Mats Hummels and so on are not performing on the highest level, neither is Manuel Neuer, and they struggle a bit. Obviously, that can change over the course of the season with a new manager, that eventually they can turn it around. But Dortmund, they don't look like they're going to crash or fade away like they did last season. So I think just because of Dortmund being strong and Bayern not at 100% or their full potential, we're going to have a title race. You can call me out if I'm wrong by April, but for now, everything is pointing in that direction.
Well, it was an incredible press conference, and it was a terrible week for Uli Hoeneß to not retract or walk back his declaration that Ozil has been playing poor for a few years after the performance Ozil put up against Leicester, but that is another story. Thanks for your time, yeah. Stefan.
Thank you for having me.
Our thanks to Stefan Butzko. Yeah, his wife is from Philadelphia. I just found that out today.
Yeah. She's probably nice. From the, you know, the mean streets.
You're
from the real soil of the city, whereas you're from the hoity-toity...
Silver Spoon,
upper class, upper Dublin area.
Yeah, upper Dublin. That is where I'm from. So our thanks to him. Nice to see that Christian Pulisic is being taken care of over there.
Very important.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. We've got what to watch for, a lot at stake in MLS, decision day on Sunday, and then a red card, man of the match. All that awaits. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. You just brought up to me, JJ, during the break. I've said a lot of things on this podcast that have angered people. Many of which I'll never win people back, and I've made peace with that. But I don't think I've ever incited listeners to this podcast quite like my, not disdain of, but my general apathy towards the band Joy Division. I have lost a lot of people.
You have. They're very upset. I have said...
Get over it.
I've said to remedy the situation that I would make you in old school fashion a mixtape of Joy Division's best songs.
Well, how about I just like go on YouTube and I'll just type in Joy Division and I'll just watch the videos.
No, because you might get one of their more how should we say, difficult to listen to songs. Like, you need an, your entry point should be Love Will Tear Us Apart and move from there.
You email me a list of the songs.
And you go do it.
And I'll go do it, okay?
All right.
Five songs.
That a nice, tight five. Okay.
And if I come back, I'll be honest. If I say, wow, that band changed music, I'll say it if I feel that way. If I don't, if I think it's just whatever, I'll be honest with you.
Inspired a genre. But anyway. That's going to happen next week. That's in Mailbag next week.
So
it's
now
happening.
I have a homework assignment.
You have a homework assignment. Five songs from spanning. I mean, they didn't have that many albums, so it shouldn't be hard. I'll give you five good ones.
Why didn't they have that many albums?
Because Ian Curtis killed himself at age 23, I believe. Yeah. Which is why I cried. The funeral scene from Control, the film, is, oh my God, it just gets me every time.
Now I feel bad.
Don't feel bad.
I didn't know any of this. I was not kidding. I don't know who they are.
Will you watch the film Control? I think you'd enjoy that.
We'll start with the music.
And move from there.
And then we'll go from there. Speaking of things, by the way, coming up on our podcast next week, did you know one of our favorite shows to talk about and reference on this podcast, Arrested Development, started 15 years ago. When was the first episode? 15 years ago next week. So it's the 15th anniversary of episode one of that show is coming up. So we are going to honor that that program on our podcast next week.
Which should be fun.
Yeah. We have a whole thing planned. For those of you who listened to us way back in the day when we honored The Rock, not Dwayne Johnson, but the movie starring Nicolas Cage, you'll maybe have a general sense of what we've got in mind.
Yeah. And we've been threatening to do this for so long. And people have asked us to redo The Rock one. But we're not going to. We're going to move forward.
Yeah. 15 years of since Arrested Development first started, one of our all-time favorite shows.
Don't worry. It'll still be football-related, Arrested Development-related.
Right. Let's see. What to watch for time? EPL, Saturday, 10 a.m., Fulham and Bournemouth.
Feels huge for Fulham.
It certainly does. And Bournemouth have become kind of a team that you don't want to play.
And also probably the team Shad Khan wishes his team were, considering the money that's been spent.
At Fulham?
Yes.
Not at Bournemouth.
No, yeah. He's probably looking at them and thinking, hey, small-sized club, young manager, check, check. Money spent on my side, check. Money spent on theirs, 25 million Jefferson Lerma, okay. But look at the football they're playing and look at their position in the table.
Bournemouth are sixth right now.
This is the Envy Derby.
And you're right. It certainly needs to start turning around quickly for Fulham. And it begins Saturday, 10 a.m. They're at home for that one. Bournemouth will be traveling to Craven Cottage. Sunday at noon, Manchester United and Everton.
Kind of a derby, really, this one.
The
Northwest Derby. And these fans hate each other and have traditionally for years. It's little known. Because seems to be good crossover of transfer of players, and it's maybe not as white hot as Liverpool, Man United.
Well, that's the thing, is sometimes I feel like...
they don't like each other, though.
But, like, oftentimes you get sort of a, my enemy's enemy is my friend, and the one thing that they share is a mutual hatred of Liverpool.
I've never
felt... But apparently that is not the situation here.
I've never felt that, no.
Who is this bigger for? Like, Jose Mourinho has to start winning quickly, right?
Yeah, I think because Everton grabbed the late winner against Southampton... And I think there's a general consensus. So I text our mutual friend Jay, who is a massive Everton fan, and just asked a couple of questions of him just to get his general feel for it. And he feels like, yeah, look, Silva has to dismantle a lot of bad kind of transactions that were made under Koeman and start again with this thing. So he's willing to be patient. And I feel as if Everton fans will be. So I think it's much bigger for Mourinho. Because if Marco Silva dances in there with his, his bag of tricks... Mm-hmm. And again, there's contrast. Marco Silva, the young, up-and-coming manager that a lot of people are talking about. And if he makes life difficult for Mourinho, it's just further pressure on Mourinho, who used to be that guy.
Yeah. And then Monday at 4 o'clock, that's kind of a different start time, Tottenham, 4 o'clock Eastern time, Tottenham will host Manchester City. Kevin De Bruyne talking a little bit about his concern playing at Wembley, coming off of his injury, coming one day after an NFL game that he played there. It's not ideal. Tottenham can't get out of there soon enough.
No.
But this is a huge game. This is a really, really important game for both clubs. One, for Manchester City, who right now are tied atop the table with Liverpool. This is a chance to kind of really make a claim. Okay, we just beat a good club on the road. We are the team to beat. and one for Spurs, obviously, who are right on the heels, along with Arsenal and Chelsea, of Liverpool and Manchester City. They're coming off of a really difficult midweek, draw to PSV Eindhoven. It feels like their Champions League is over, so the competitions that now matter to them are getting tighter and tighter, and none more so than this. They want to remain in this title race as long as humanly possible, and you've got to beat clubs like Manchester City at home if you're serious about that.
Can I ask you something quickly?
Yeah.
If the pitch is in a bad order, like if it rains and it's cut up, who does that benefit more?
I have no idea, because I feel like they're both clubs. They both want to press high.
They both like to pass it on the deck.
Right.
That might be difficult. You see, I'm thinking of Giants-Bears, and then England play Croatia on the Wednesday night in a qualifier. Uh-huh. The famous defeat where Croatia knocked them out of the European Championships in 08. And that was, the Giants had played there on the Sunday. Now, the field was new and the stadium was new then, but the Giants and whoever they were playing, I think it was the Bears, they cut it up. And it really, I mean, it didn't help anybody really, but I think it hurt England that day.
There's an NFL game at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, Eagles-Jaguars. And then my sister's actually going to that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then 4 o'clock the next day.
Oh, God. You better hope.
I don't know who it helps, though. Honestly, I, they're both teams, like you say, that like to pass. I really don't know. I guess if you don't know, then it can't be used as an excuse. They both have to deal with it. It's adverse for both of them.
It's the aforementioned Shad Khan. It's a really good thing for football in England, or the national team in particular, that he didn't get the ownership of the stadium. He tried to buy Wembley Stadium. We presume that will be the home for the London franchise that people are speculating is coming down the line for the NFL.
Right.
Ooh. Yeah. And they would rent it back to the FA. That was a whole bizarre thing we never talked about, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
So strange.
And then we move to La Liga Sunday, 11:15 a.m. Eastern Time. Barcelona and Real Madrid. A little bit unfortunate, obviously. Messi not playing. We always enjoy watching him.
It doesn't feel like a full Clásico. It's a Clásico without Ronaldo and Messi.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you're right. It's like a brave new world that we will one day have to face, and that day is on
has arrived.
But like we mentioned earlier, we don't need to rehash old ground. It's massive for the Real Madrid manager Julen Lopetegui. Feels like his job is kind of on the line on Sunday. Who do you like in that one? I think it's got to be Barcelona, the form they've been in.
I feel a draw would be such a great result for Real Madrid.
Yeah. And then we move to MLS, the final regular season weekend of the year. Sunday, all these games at 4:30 Eastern Time. Columbus Crew and Minnesota United FC. Columbus need to win to clinch a playoff spot.
Can't believe it. They've left themselves work to do. I thought this was locked in.
A few weeks ago, we talked about the important game that they had against the Philadelphia Union. Not important because one of these teams was going to miss the postseason. Important because whoever won that game, we thought, okay, now they've got a real leg up to have home field in that initial round. But since then, the Union won that game, and Columbus have just fallen on hard times. It's so funny. It's such a reversal from last year where they were playing well but had all this talk about leaving. Now we know they're staying, most likely, but they're not playing well. So it's a huge game for them. A draw would probably – well, I don't want to say it wouldn't be enough. It's contingent on what happens in the New England-Montreal match. A win for Montreal combined with a draw or loss for Columbus would get Montreal in. Because Montreal will hold the tiebreaker over Columbus. You know, in MLS, the tiebreaker being more wins. Mm. So Montreal would have that over them. So Columbus, to feel safe, they've got to beat Minnesota United FC, which you really think they should do at home. But we've seen really weird things happen on decision day before. Teams playing for nothing that have spoiled seasons for teams playing for everything.
Now, Brad Friedel says that New England will be professional about it and will play properly and do their job in this. So there's that.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah, well, that's what he said. I mean, they're not a good team, so.
Sunday, all these on Sunday. I'm going to stop saying that. LA Galaxy hosting the Houston Dynamo. LA have to win to get in. A draw will not be enough. Real Salt Lake hold the tiebreaker. And oddly, because of math, weird math in MLS, Real Salt Lake are not playing on decision day. They have already played their 34 games, so all they can do is sit back and watch now and root against LA.
What would it be like in Pecky's living room? Oh, oh my
God. You gotta get a mic in there.
Handing out photocopies after the game to his family to explain why they were hard done by.
But yeah, LA have to win. The draw, that will not do it for him. By the way, I just wanted to say one thing about the Galaxy and Zlatan in particular, because the other day...
Oh, I love him.
Well, no. I just feel like this bears mentioning for people who weren't left convinced the other day. We got an emailer who... I don't want to put words in her mouth, but it seemed like...
She was a bit skeptical about the nominations.
He had been nominated for multiple MLS awards. And
she felt there was hype. Or she didn't feel it was hype, but she asked
media hype was the term that I think was used.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw this out there to kind of add a little bit greater perspective to the point that it is not media hype, that he really has been sensational for them this season. Listen to this. I saw this at MLSsoccer.com. This season, Zlatan has averaged a goal or assist once every 64 minutes, or basically 1.4 times per game he is involved in directly involved in a goal. I would like to point out the following. That is the highest in league history. Diego Serna in 2001 is next at 1.37, followed by Kobe Jones in 1998 at 1.35. We have never, literally never seen this sort of efficiency from a player in this league. It's the most efficient season in MLS history. So
he's
deserving.
He's finding it a doddle.
If you want to say it like that, I would say he's playing great. If you want to make fun of the league, then that's your prerogative.
No, I'm just saying, Many people said he's going to rip it up, and he has.
Let's see. Toronto FC and Atlanta United FC also playing. A win will give Atlanta the supporters' shield. This game is weirdly fascinating.
It is, because there's the shadow of the imminent departure of Tata Martino.
That he's going to Mexico, as we had pointed out, was very likely a few weeks ago. But that isn't even what I was going to say. Toronto, this season is lost. All right, this season was a disaster for them. We could have never imagined it having gone this bad. The only thing that they can cling to is that they still have the points record. For now, they are playing Atlanta. Should Atlanta get a point from this match, Atlanta will then knock that Toronto season from a year ago that was the greatest ever.
Oh, dynasty.
Out of the record books. And Atlanta will now grab hold of that. So Toronto, if they have to find reasons to really want to go all in, that is a oddly interesting dynamic that the schedule gave us on this last day. Atlanta have 69 points. That is what Toronto had last season when they set that record. Also, though, the Red Bulls play Orlando City. A draw or loss for Atlanta and a win for the Red Bulls will give New York the supporters' shield, and that would also give New York the record for most points in a season. Atlanta and the Red Bulls are doing something that if they were doing it any other year by themselves, it would be truly incredible.
It doesn't it compound the misery of Toronto? Like, you've had a terrible season, but at least you could look to last season where you were record setting, trend setting, greatest ever. And now it's just going to be, or it possibly will be, eclipsed.
The real misery could be for the Red Bulls, who could wind up breaking Toronto's points record. But if Atlanta also break that record, the Red Bulls will have had a season where they'll have the second most points that a team has ever had in MLS, and it won't even be the most in this season. They'll still be the two seed in the playoffs.
It's incredible.
Yeah. Let's see. We bring it down the stretch now.
Red card.
Can I go first here?
Yeah. I've just got two red cards, by the way.
Breaking all the rules. You know what? Then you go first.
All right. My first red card is from the BBC. A new and expanded Club World Cup held every year featuring some of the Premier League and Europe's top clubs has been proposed by FIFA, because of course it has. An official document seen by the BBC, there are two options for an annual tournament alongside the original plan for a competition every 4 years. FIFA's ruling council will decide whether and how to proceed when it meets in Rwanda on Thursday and Friday. UEFA is expected to vote against the plans. So just basically that thing of greed again. Mm-hmm. This will be for the elite clubs to maximise their revenues so they don't have to pay money down. There's no trickle-down economy. They want it all for themselves. They want this massive league. There's too much football. It's just utter... I hate the idea.
If this happens, I feel like we're treading on dangerous ground.
I think we're entering the point where a lot of people think the NFL is right now.
Overexposure does not help.
No.
It can to a point. It can open up new markets and bring in new fans. It can to a point, but this to me is going overboard.
We have storied and established leagues and practices and European competitions. This is messing for the sake of a cabal of owners who just are saying, well, why are Leicester in the Champions League? Look at the size of them. Well, why are they in it? Why is Ludo Goretz in it? Why is Victoria Pledson in it? These people just want to eviscerate the systems that we've had for years in football so they can maximize their revenues. It's that simple.
And it's going to water down competitions that we currently value, and now you're going to not know which one matters and which one doesn't. It's different competitions are going to matter for different clubs, so you're going to have certain clubs putting out an A squad, but the club they're playing won't care about it, so they'll put out a C squad, and it will ruin a lot of competitions, I feel, that we hold dear, mainly the Champions League.
Yeah, which is the preeminent European competition, world club competition for a reason.
Yeah, I'm worried about that one also.
Ugh.
I really am.
Infantino.
JJ, my red card goes to Leo Messi's sling. Did you see what his arm was wrapped up in?
Was it shoddy? Really shoddy?
It was like the most rudimentary. I mean,
you expected it to be like space age.
Well, it looked like
made of carbonite fibers.
It just looked like the kind of medical accessory that like a soldier in World War II would have received. Like he was just right off the battlefield. It was so bizarre.
He was coming out of the Ardennes.
With all the advances that we've had in modern medicine, this is the treatment for the world's greatest player. It was just an ace bandage tied around his neck, linked up with his arm. Like, I'm not in any way trying to impugn Barcelona's medical team. Maybe this really is the best way to treat the injury that he has. I don't know. After all, there is something to be said for the simplest methods being the most effective methods and all that. But JJ, I mean, I'm pretty sure this looked to me, when I looked at him, I was like, that's the same treatment that Wile E. Coyote received after he got hit by a bus chasing the Roadrunner. He looked exactly the same. I mean, like, he can't be fitted with a proper cast, or like, I've seen slings that are designed for your arm to kind of like go through a sleeve kind of thing.
Yeah.
This was just like a glorified rubber band, like an ace bandage just tied around his neck. I was like, that can't be all it is. It was like, I don't know, very weird to me. Surely for Leo Messi, we can at least fit him with something of modern science and technology.
Yeah.
But hey, if it works, then who am I to say otherwise?
I didn't remark upon it. I just thought it was cool he could get to sit with his son Thiago watch the game.
Yeah, that was cool.
Maybe Thiago made it for him.
It's an arts and crafts project?
Yeah.
JJ, what is your other
red card?
Just play Phil Neville for me.
Okay.
This is the celebration. Sarri celebrates. Then it's this guy here that goes in front of Jose Mourinho. The first one, he clenched his fist. And then as he's going back, he celebrates again in front of him. Here, there now.
Yep.
Disgraceful. If I was Mauricio Sarri, I'd send that guy in and sack him from the club.
Yeah, you wouldn't, Phil. You wouldn't. Your moral outrage is not welcome here. Listen, this is a general thing. It's not just Phil Neville.
Uh-huh.
The way people treated that incident at the weekend was astounding to me. And it shows the levels of hysteria that we have right now in the game. Disgraceful. Was it really disgraceful? Like, think of the term disgraceful. Right? And I know everything's in context, but it wasn't. It was an over-exuberant celebration which was responded to by a threat of violence from a man that never manifested itself. Let's move to Sergio Ramos. Sergio Ramos is being hauled over the coals, and the media have been asking questions constantly about him out of frustration in a drill kicking a ball at a youth player twice. Andrew, any of us who have come up through the game, any game, competitive, high school, anything, we've all done or seen stuff like this. It was nothing. Yet, he had to take to Twitter, probably at the urging of Real Madrid officials, mm-hmm. to say the following in Champions League voice. Although it may not seem like it, they are quite common situations, but it is not an excuse. My reaction should not have been that. We always go full, right, Regui? Regui is obviously the player. In the end, team victory together. Like, he shouldn't have to do this. This is just normal, banal stuff. And it's, you know what annoys me as well? When someone cusses on TV and I can hear it on the sideline parabolics and I can hear it at home on TV, good! Because it's part of the experience. If you go to the game, you don't have an Arsenal official or a Liverpool official beside you. We apologise for that fruity language. As like I hear from Arlo White or whoever. Stop trying to sanitise everything. Like there are genuine terrible things happening in football that we should be properly concerned about. And when they threw back to the studio after Mourinho, it was these automatic reactions from like Robbie Musto, who spent the best part of 20 years in the English game. Imagine the things that have happened to him at the end of Alan Shearer's elbow. And he comes up, disgraceful, yeah, just disgraceful. It's not disgraceful. Everyone needs to just calm down, enjoy the game, and don't try and sanitize the stuff that actually, secretly, we get a kick out of.
You're right. I largely agree with you. But the only thing I would tell you is, let's not at least act like what happened in that Mourinho-Marco Ayani situation wasn't unusual. Let's not make it sound like that happens all the time. We don't, there's a manager, there's a camera fixated on managers all the time. We don't see
which
that.
Which was worse? Which was worse? Joe Jordan on the sideline for Tottenham when Gattuso and him squared off. And Gattuso practically what? Did he?
Yeah, probably that one.
Right.
I'm not saying that a crime was committed. I agree. Phil Neville saying that he needs to be fired.
Fired!
Is so over the top.
I love this.
It did warrant coverage. Like, I do believe that.
Why can't people just be normal people? I remember a show that we both loved, Opie and Anthony, which wasn't everyone's taste, and a lot of stuff they said I really didn't like. But they used to make fun of Radio Guy, who would talk in this, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, talk in your own voice, talk the way you talk. That's what's, you know, clear to people. That's what people want, authenticity.
Right.
I want, when someone throws back to the panel, someone to say, you know what, that was nothing. Handbags, nothing. In fact, I've seen worse. And tell me where you've seen worse. Instead of what they expect to be said.
I'll tell you what, not to be a shill, but I do believe, like, you get that from, like, on the ESPN FC panel with Burley,
I think so.
Nickel.
Burley, yeah.
I do think, you know, Shaka, all those guys, I feel like you get it. I don't mean to disparage NBC, SN. I think their coverage is great, and I think usually you get similar stuff from them, too. But I think in the moment, they were reacting to something that was unusual, and maybe it caused some people to over-exaggerate.
Remember Craig Burley? We asked him about an incident. He told us about Nigel Pearson running down the tunnel to attack Dimitri Karine, right. The Chelsea goalkeeper.
Right.
Just be authentic and stop getting so worked up about this nonsense.
All right.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
Now you're all worked up over nonsense. Let's see, my man of the match, JJ, it takes a big man to do what I'm about to do, and I'm going to do it. My man of the match goes to the Mexican national team members in this week's Champions League.
Whoa, 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 this is... I feel like this is a Scooby-Doo moment where I rip off your mask and you're actually...
And I've been Hercules Gomez all along.
Something like that.
JJ, Irving Lozano scored for PSV in the Champions League. Hector Herrera scored for FC Porto, and Jesus Corona also scored for FC Porto, all in the Champions League. By the way, Lozano also drew the red on Hugo Lloris, and Corona also provided the assist for Herrera's goal. Bigger picture, Lozano this year at PSV, all the hype that came into the season on the back of a good World Cup for him, he's got 11 goals and 4 assists in 15 matches. So he's been directly involved in 15 goals in 15 matches for PSV this season. He is living up to the hype. Can you even begin to imagine how you and I would be reacting if this were U.S. players? Like, if there was a week in the Champions League where, like, Pulisic scored, McKennie scored, is there even a third American that we can name who could score in a Champions League match
we
right now?
Me and you would go to Home Depot, we would buy chisels, and we would scale Mount Rushmore and put another face on Mount Rushmore of a U.S. soccer player.
Yeah,
we would lose our frickin' minds.
Right. And yet, for Mexico, it almost felt routine. Like, you know, Lozano, yeah, he's really good.
Could it be they have better players than us?
Impossible. Impossible. But you know what? I give them their due, because those guys are flying right now for their clubs in the Champions League. So
and we always say it, me and you, we have got one cliche, and it's you want your top players at the top clubs playing well. And that's true, isn't it?
CONCACAF above all. words to live by. It'll be on my tombstone.
It's your new tattoo.
CONCACAF above all.
Oh, my God.
Well, hey, that's our show for the week. Our thanks to Stefan Butzko joining us earlier to talk about Pulisic and Borussia Dortmund and their 4-0 win. This was fun. We will be back next week with full recaps, of course, of El Clasico, of Tottenham-Manchester City, and a look ahead to the postseason, plus our Arrested Development tribute. Should be fun, man.
I got to brush up on my Arrested Development then.
I know. Should be a good time. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.